Welcome into the KSRO Kitchen. I'm Steve Garner, along with Chef John Ash, celebrating our 32nd year in the broadcast food business.
who would have believed it, huh?
We were so young.
Yes,
so impressionable.
We still are.
In the 1987, the swinging days of Ronald Reagan, right into the Bush years.
Oh, and, I forgot about all
yeah,
of that. Yeah,
I know we've seen a lot of things come and go in the world of food.
Yeah.
It's a great way to start the new year as we welcome John Finger from Hog Island Oyster Company. I can't imagine a better way to start the new year than with oysters.
Well, and to celebrate. And oysters are really a celebration food often.
Yeah, and I'm just, you guys talking about 32 years. So this is, we just passed our 35th year.
Mm-hmm.
Which is amazing. I can't believe I started this company when I was 5 years old.
So, let's bring people up that are listening out of the area. Folks that live in the Bay Area, I think, certainly if they love oysters, know about Hog Island. Started in 1983 or so, was that it? You and a couple other partners kind of plowed into this and started this magnificent enterprise out in Marshall, California, which is a few miles north of Point Reyes, isn't that?
Yeah, so we're about 10 miles north of Point Reyes Station on Tamales Bay.
And what prompted you to do that? Did you grow up loving oysters in New
York?
It's
funny. No, it's funny. So I grew up on Long Island, New York, and in a very similar area. A lot of people don't realize this, but I grew up almost out at the end of Long Island, which was then all potato farms. And, you know, the population would triple in the summertime. The sidewalks literally rolled up in the wintertime. And it was about fishing, clamming, hunting, all those things. And I went to school for marine biology because I really was interested in that environment. And I was also very interested in food. I grew up, we had our family vegetable garden out back and did the whole, you know, go and harvest the corn and put the water on the boil, that whole thing. But it's funny because the only seafood I didn't eat was oysters. Didn't like oysters growing up, and I wanted to raise fish. That's what I wanted. I'm a big sport fisherman, and I wanted to raise salmon or trout or striped bass. And, you know, could see back then that the fisheries of the world weren't going to keep up and that we needed to figure out how to farm seafood.
Yeah. So how did you get to oysters? What was the epiphany?
The epiphany, well, it was funny because I did a semester in school down in Southern California at the National Marine Fisheries Service Lab. Got to see some of Northern California. I had a buddy who was at UCSC. And thought after graduating, I was a surfer, I still surf, and I thought that, you know, gee, I could live in California for a few years, quote. So came out here, started knocking on doors just to get a foot in the business. And the first job was for an oyster company in Moss Landing in the Monterey Bay area.
Oh.
And owned by a big corporation, hated how they ran it, worked there 2.5 years, quit twice, but in the interim, sort of fell in love with the shellfish business because of the environmental connection. It's really, really about place. You have to have healthy bays and estuaries that function as they should, and oysters actually help estuaries function as they should.
Did you work at any other oyster operations besides Moss Landing?
Not really. That company bought a company up in Tamales Bay. I actually came up and I was the R&D person at that point in time and helped hire a crew and train a manager. Got to see Tamales Bay, which reminded me more of where I grew up than any place I'd seen on the West Coast. I went to Europe, did a consulting gig in Europe and for the Irish government, and then worked in Spain in the shellfish business for a little bit. And at that point in time, had decided that's what I wanted to do, and looked into moving back east. And at that point in time, it was very hard to start shellfish farms on the East Coast because there were still remnants of a wild fishery, and those people were somewhat opposed to leasing ground. And I had way more connections on the West Coast. And a good buddy of mine, Bill Marinelli, had started a distribution business out here and said, "Look, you can go back east, but both you and I know nothing's being done like what we know can be done in terms," because back then Pacific oysters were not an oyster that people could consider eating raw in a half shell because it was the way they were cultured. And I had seen in Europe, you know, that wasn't necessarily the case. And so long story short, decided to start, you know, the company out here. And Tamales Bay, again, was a place that reminded me a lot of home, and being an hour and a half from a major city, but still in the country. And so we decided to start it out here.
So oysters were being grown in Tamales Bay before you.
People started farming oysters in Tamales Bay in 1873. They actually know the year. The West Coast oyster history is very interesting. We have a native oyster. It's called the Olympia oyster, which a lot of people aren't familiar with, which is very small and it's a flat oyster and very almost astringent in flavor. It has a high iodine content. It's very similar to the European flat oyster, which has that.
Or the Belon.
Belon, yes, exactly. Yeah. You can't call them Belon. That's like us calling our sparkling wine champagne, by the way. Don't do that yet. So then when the Transcontinental Railroad got done, people decided to bring smaller oysters from the East Coast all the way across and put them into San Francisco Bay and Tamales Bay and Willapa Bay and Washington and grow them out. Yeah. And that was for decades. That was the West Coast oyster industry. And then in the 1920s, someone introduced the Pacific oyster from Japan. And that's what everybody on the West Coast grows. That's our trademark, or our Hog Island Sweetwater oysters. So, but those oysters, the way they were grown for decades was in clusters, grown very big to be shucked into jars to be fried and baked or maybe barbecued, and they were not considered suitable for half shell in this country. So when we started growing Pacific oysters using single seed method, which is a way you can sort of keep an eye on the shell quality and shape and size as you grow them, and selling these small or extra small Pacific oysters for raw and a half shell, we had an uphill battle in the early 80s because people were going, you can't eat those raw. And luckily, we had a few people like Judy Rogers and Alice Waters who believed in what we were doing, and that was the beginning of it.
So what's Hangtown Fry? Isn't that when you go back in the history of oysters in California?
And it's just like, I want to get this right. I think it's supposedly conceived in Placerville.
Yeah, I think
I believe
so.
Placerville. And which was, there were a lot of hangings. I suppose it was sort of the last meal request kind of thing, you know, trying to do is the most expensive thing you could eat, which was back then eggs and oysters together. So
I had read that because during the gold rush, most of the cooking had been done by Chinese, that this was a riff on egg foo young. That's actually how the dish got started, was someone had oysters and they had a Chinese cook at one of these saloons, and he put this together and created this dish that became known as Hangtown.
Yeah. And I'd heard something similar as well, and it just became known as Hangtown because of Placerville being known as that. So,
So you mentioned the Japanese oysters. The Japanese did a lot of research and developed a lot of important innovations in growing oysters, didn't they?
Yeah, they were really growing intensively, you know, where they were doing, hanging on strings or ropes from platforms to be able to grow vertically and use up vertical space as well as horizontal space and bamboo poles and all that kind of stuff. So, and the original oysters that were being cultured out here were actually baby oysters that were set on scallop shells in Japan and then packed in straw and seaweed and then shipped across the ocean to here.
But they didn't make it very well, did they?
Enough of them made it to get a foothold, and then they naturalized in a few places up in Washington State and British Columbia, and then that's where the seed supply was coming for years. But what really got oyster farming going, and this is not just on the West Coast but globally, is the development of hatchery technology, where now you can create the seed in a building on land by creating warming up water and doing all those kinds of things to create the larvae and create the seed.
So oysters have many names. Where did they get their names? It's the same. I mean, most of what we see, it's the same oyster, but it got its name from the place that it was grown, as you mentioned.
Yes, yeah. Earlier. So I think there's, I think it varies a little bit. There are about 8 species worldwide that are actually different species of oysters that are commercially important. But then you can see hundreds and hundreds of names, and it really has to do with, we like to explain this when we're talking to people about oyster flavor, and because people can get confused. So first and foremost, oysters will taste different depending on the variety, just like wine. So we grow the Pacific oyster, the Kumamoto oyster, the Eastern or Atlantic oyster, and the European flat oyster, and a few of the native Olympias. We do all that in Tamales Bay. But side by side, those will all taste different, because they all select for different types of microscopic algae that's in the water. They don't all like the same types. And then they all uptake minerals differently and have different fat content, all those kinds of things. So even side by side, those oysters will taste different. But then a Pacific oyster in another bay is going to taste different based on, just like with wine and terroir, we call it miroir. So that bay is going to have a different soup of microscopic algae. It's going to have a different, slightly different mineral input based on the land mass around it, and so that's going to affect the flavor. And we like to say that we as growers have a small effect on how the oyster grows, you know, depending if you do a good job or a bad job, or are they in contact with the bottom or off bottom, those will have another nuanced flavor.
So how do you grow oysters? That you talked about, there's different methods that people can use. Bottom of the basket. Yeah. I'm kind of confused. You something called a single seed method?
Yeah. So oysters start off, to get into the technical aspects of it. Oysters start off life as free swimming larvae. Uh-huh. So what happens is oysters release eggs or sperm out into the water column. Most oysters do. They mix. They form the larvae, which are now microscopic and just floating around in the water column, swimming around. After about 10 days to 2 weeks, they lose the ability to swim. They fall out of the water column and have a little foot, and they search around and try to cement themselves to something. Mm-hmm. Once they do that, then they start forming shells out of the minerals in the seawater, out of calcium carbonate, essentially. Right. And so in Mother Nature, less than 0.1% make that transition. That's why oysters create millions of eggs, because they have to overcome that problem. So the basic way of farming oysters, and still done in parts of the world, is to guess when it's happening and increase the odds by putting more suitable substrate out in the water. So bags of shell in France, they used to use, and they still use, terracotta roof tiles dipped in a limestone cement slurry, you know, anything that's going to track the seed. And then once you catch that seed on there, you can let them grow a little bit, scrape them off, or take that shell and throw it out on the bottom somewhere. But
pretty hit or miss.
Pretty hit or miss still. You still have lower yields that way and lower quality, and but it's still, when you're growing oysters as a commodity to be shucked in jars, and to do that, that's the way you grow them, because you have to have a low growing cost, because you're spending a lot of money to shuck in jars and pack and all that kind of stuff. So. But what really revolutionized it was in the single seed method, which is we do this in hatcheries now. So the shell is ground up into powder, essentially. So it's 300 micron chips of shell, only room for one little larvae on each little shell chip.
Individually.
Mm-hmm. So now this is done in a tank where we have a fine mesh screen, and you're adding the baby larvae and the shell chips in there, and you're allowing them to eat cement to one little shell chip. And now you've got to watch them all along the way, because now as they grow, you want to put them in a larger mesh container to allow more water flow to go through. So there's a lot more husbandry involved, and you're sorting and grading, getting the faster growing ones away from the slower growing mm-hmm. ones. Otherwise, they get stunted. And so all along the way now, you have to containerize them. Mm-hmm. We use different plastic mesh bags, those kinds of things. At some point, if you have the suitable area and the oysters get to be about an inch or so, you can actually throw them out on the bottom loose. We can't really do that in Tamales Bay because we have these creatures called bat rays that would just absolutely love us if we did that. They would eat every single oyster if we did. So we have to keep them in a tray or a bag. And again, the trick is, you know, how much density, you know, how many oysters in there to give them room to grow, at the same time utilize the resources you're paying money for, the bags, and then just treating them right. You know, the oysters don't like to be buried like clams do.
So they're hanging in free in
water.
Well,
some of them will be, the bags might be on the bottom itself if the bottom is hard enough and mm-hmm. not muddy, and that's because the muddiness can influence the flavor a bit. A lot of what we do is what's called the rack and bag method, which is the extensive method that they use in France. And that is these plastic mesh bags, which are about 3 foot by 2 foot, that look like a big Brillo pad, for anybody who knows what a Brillo pad is, are on some sort of metal frame, a rebar frame, that keeps them off the bottom by a foot or two. And now what's nice about that is the oysters stay cleaner, and now you've got water flowing not only over the top of them, but over the bottom, around the bottom, and around. There's more water flow, means more food, more oxygen, more healthy oysters, cleaner, all that kind of stuff. And then also they tumble around a little bit with the wind and wave action, which can improve the shell quality. And then there's all sorts of techniques. You can attach a float to the bag to have it tip up and down and tumble with each tide cycle. And that's becoming really big up in the Pacific Northwest. There are a few oysters that are marketed as tumbled oysters, and so...
So the food comes to them. It's like breakfast in bed.
I mean,
the oysters.
That's the part that really, and which really hooked me in this, is the sustainability factor, because you know you can't feed and fertilize out there. It really is about place and choosing. I tell people about 75% of this business is site selection. Even within a bay, where are the good places? Where's the great water flow? You know, that's going to make these oysters happy.
And you found it.
We think so.
And how long does it take from seed to my mouth?
About our oysters, our Pacific oyster, it depends on the variety. The Pacific oyster we grow takes about a year and 3 months to a year and a half to get to extra small size. The Kumamoto's we grow, that's a 2-year plus oyster. and the what we call the Hog Island Atlantics, which is the eastern variety that we grow out here, those take about 2.5 years.
Oh my gosh, and it takes 5 seconds.
Yeah, I know.
to eat one.
That's why you need to savor and slow down. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah. So talk about, I think you've become famous for the oyster bars. And the first one of those was in Ferry Plaza in San Francisco. How did that happen?
You know, it's funny. We always...
Why don't we hold that story for after this break?
Okay. Yeah.
We'll talk about Ferry Market. We'll talk about Marshall. Napa, also at Oxbow Market, too. And also, big surprise here, which we talked about a year and a half ago or so, is the new restaurant, the old Tony's restaurant, is going to be the new Hog Island restaurant. We'll tell you more about that. Steve Garner, along with Chef John Ash, special guest John Finger from Hog Island Oyster. It's the KSRO Good Food Hour.
Petaluma hears FM News Talk KSRO on Crystal Clear FM at 94.5.
Now that the seasons are finally changing, one thing is apparent. The state of the heating in your home is not going to cut it. Not for you, and certainly not for your holiday guests. Hi, this is Pat Kerrigan. Instead of Googling furnace, why not put your trust in a local company? That's Henry Mechanical. Joe Henry's been heating and cooling homes and businesses in our area for the past 25 years. Is one area of your home too cold or too hot? For me, it's the living area. Not to worry, ask Henry Mechanical about Mitsubishi Zoned Comfort Solution. Yes, zoned heating and cooling solutions for Mitsubishi. Concentrate on the parts of your home or business that need help. You hear me talk about how important it is to shop local. Well, tis the season to call Henry Mechanical at 707-838-3311. Local, friendly professionals who will survey your heating and cooling issues and fix them. Tell them Pat Kerrigan sent you, or go to henrymechanical.com. Couldn't we all use a little extra comfort right about now?
Message and data rates may apply.
Earning your degree from one of the top business schools in the country might sound impossible to fit into your workload. But what if there were a business degree that furthered your career and gave you access to world-renowned faculty, leaders, and mentors, all on your schedule? One that opened doors to some of the most influential CEOs, tech companies, law firms, entrepreneurs, and thought leaders. And what if you could earn that degree in as little as 16 months, 100% online? To find out more, text GRANT to 79645. That's GRANT to 79645. Start your online MBA, Information Management, or Business Analytics Master's program from the W.P. Carey School of Business at Arizona State University today. Learn more about the W.P. Carey Business Graduate Programs online. Text GRANT to 79645. That's GRANT to 79645.
Join Mike Kelly on the Real Estate Hour Sunday mornings at 9 a.m. right here on KSRO. The Real Estate Hour is the longest-running talk show in the North Bay. Tune in for tips on buying and selling your home, the loans to look for, and Sonoma County real estate market knowledge from a guy who's been selling full-time right here since 1978. Call in live and ask your questions direct to Mike. That's the Real Estate Hour with Mike Kelly, Sunday mornings from 9 to 10 on KSRO.
Start your career as a full-time bartender or beverage server at Grayton. Meet Sergio from 630 Park Steakhouse.
We offer not only full-time, but the benefit package is ridiculously good.
Enroll in our free bartender school today, and you could earn a $250 hiring bonus. Classes start Saturday, January 12th. Earn great pay plus tips in a fast-paced and fun environment. Visit GraytonResortCasino.com for details.
KSRO, AM, FM, and online. Depend on it.
Co-founder of Hog Island Oyster, John Finger, joined Chef John Ash and me, Steve Garner, in the KSRO Oyster Bed this morning. We're talking about the derivations of Hog Island and their new projects, and also we got a great tutorial of how oysters are grown on the West Coast. You mentioned off mic that demand wildly exceeds your ability to produce oysters.
Yeah, and it's been that way for our entire history. We, you know, for many years, just essentially wholesaled oysters in the Bay Area and around the country. And for years, we had people on quota. You know, once our brand was sort of established and stuff, we'd have people that, well, maybe we can add you next year. And then when we started, you know, having our own restaurants, it's very similar. I mean, we produce about 3 million oysters a year in Tamales Bay. We sell about 6 million oysters a year company-wide. So, you know, we buy quite a few oysters from farms that we know. We buy direct from farms or friends of ours up in Washington State. We're trying to start another farm in Humboldt Bay. We actually have a hatchery and nursery up there to grow young oysters, but we're working on establishing another farm up there as well. I would love to see more shellfish farms in general in the state of California, but it's gotten really, really difficult to permit them.
The regulations are hard.
Yeah, yeah.
So tell us about Ferry Plaza, San Francisco Ferry. How did that happen?
So, yeah, it's interesting. So we always thought we'd want to do something direct to consumers. I mean, it was something that, again, I had worked in restaurants all through college, was in the food. And so we had started doing the retail, you know, out at the farm sort of in the 90s, and that was some direct to consumers. And we know we wanted to do more out there, but that was an old site that had a lot of issues that we, you know, we weren't able to do like any kind of restaurant or anything. And we were doing the farmer's market booth down at the Ferry Building when the whole project got launched to do that, and we got approached by the developers down there to do an oyster bar. And it was very interesting because they our original oyster bar down there was 1,000 square feet, and I tried to get 500 square feet because I was nervous about even 1,000 square feet, and that was a funky part of the city, if mm-hmm. people remember that mm-hmm. beforehand, and everybody thought it would do well, but that it would take a few years, you know, and in the end, we decided to go ahead and do it. And we just got our butts kicked from the day we opened. It was just off to the races. It was, you know, extremely popular. So that was late 2003 we opened that. I can't believe that's 15 years. And then that restaurant was going through about 1 million oysters a year 10 years in, and the building gave us the opportunity to take over the space next door. And so we shut down in 2014 for a couple of months, remodeled, and that's now a bigger, you know, 2,700 square foot restaurant. We call that the Beast. And that restaurant goes through 2 million oysters a year. So.
And then when did Oxbow happen?
Oxbow was the end of 2008. And again, some of the same people involved in that project. And we had been invited a year earlier into that project, and we weren't too sure about downtown Napa. And then we started seeing some, just even the whole South Valley, what was going on with Carneros, and realized that this is a good place to be. And then, of course, we opened in late 2008, and then the economic...
Perfect timing.
Yeah, perfect timing. Copia shut down 3 months after we opened. It was like, oh, boy. And so we hung on for about a year and a half, but then it really started ticking up in a big way, and that restaurant goes through about 1 million oysters a year now, so very popular.
So what about this new restaurant?
The new old restaurant.
Yeah. So how really did they set us up? This was Tony's restaurant. It had been there since the late 40s, I think I remember.
Yeah,
early
so
50s.
Tony's Seafood, which is about, I guess, about 2 miles south of our location out on in Tamales Bay.
Family owned all this
Yeah,
year.
It was started in 1948 by the Conatich family. And I don't know if a lot of people don't realize this, but even Nick's Cove had sort of the same origins out there, the other restaurant. They were started by Croatian fishing families. There was a community out there of Croatians who were fishing in Tamales Bay. So the original Tony started selling fish at the side of the road, decided to do a restaurant. I think this is 1948. And so they started Tony Seafood as a place to sell the fish that they were catching in Tamales Bay. And then it was taken over by the son, and then eventually by his two sons, John and Anton. So yeah, last year was 70 years for Tony's.
My gosh. And so in 2016-17
I think the end of 2016 they approached us. We were already negotiating a lease for another restaurant in another location somewhere else, and said, hey, we're not going to do this. I had talked to them a couple of years earlier. Neither one of them had kids. I kind of could see that they weren't going to continue to do this. It's such an old iconic place. We thought we could do something special there. And so they approached us and said, hey, we haven't put this on the market. We want you guys to take this over. So we jumped. And so we've been spending the last year plus. Yeah.
Because when we first talked about this with you on the air, it was May 2017.
Yeah. Oh, really? Wow.
And you were saying, hey, you know, we're going to be open approximately by Labor Day before Thanksgiving. Yeah. And you did open.
We did open for a short period of time. We had... we felt it was important to reopen the place. It hadn't been open earlier in the year because the brothers didn't want to reopen it. The county let us reopen with a limited menu and limited use of the equipment there because a lot of it was not up to code and snuff. And so we did there for a while just to kind of get our feet under us and go, okay, what are some of the issues going to be here? But then we shut down January 1, 2018. I got to get my years straight here to do the major remodel.
Who was the opening chef there?
Matt Shapiro. Uh-huh. So Matt will be the chef. Matt's still with us. And he's a great seafood chef. I mean, he's
so Tony's though was fish and chips.
Yeah,
and barbecue oysters.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
stuff
yeah.
Like
they
that.
Were one of the places that got really famous back in the day for barbecued oysters. Yeah, yeah. You know, they always would have fish and chips on, you know, clams and pasta, some of those things. And we're going to pay a lot of homage to that.
Well, when I used to go out, I just got the Tony's burger.
Yeah, yeah.
That was the big thing on the menu.
Yeah, and we're going to have a burger on the menu. So this gives us the opportunity. So we're going to call it Tony Seafood. You know, by Hog Island, we're going to keep.
Oh.
We're going to kind of, like, on one hand, pay homage to what the Conotiches have done over all these years, but then make it ours. Mm-hmm. So, for instance, we're going to have a burger on the menu. We don't have a burger on the menu at other restaurants. There's not going to be an oyster bar front and center in the middle of the restaurant like it is at other places. So there'll be oysters on the menu. Of course, there'll be barbecued oysters on the menu. But, you know, we'll do fish and chips. We'll do a burger. We're actually already working with Lauren Poncha from Stemple Creek. You know,
local Marin County.
Yes. Yeah. So we're already getting ground beef from him. And we have a ranch that he's leasing some space from us. We call it our hamburger herd right up the street. So it'll be that, you know, feel, that old school seafood place on the water.
So you're going to have a fryer.
Oh, yeah,
okay,
there'll be fryers.
I just wanted to make sure this wasn't. Okay.
Well, yeah. Fish and chips, you got to.
You got to, yeah.
You know, John, with everybody, oh, no, we're going to be completely free of any oil.
But I think the idea there, it's on the coast.
Yeah.
You know, and it's a casual place to kind of drop in. And you're planning to open when?
let's say early February. We're very, very close. It's been an extremely difficult project. You know, I've been involved in projects around the coast before, but this one, because it was just a building that really hadn't been remodeled in any major way for 70 years, and it's built out over the water. Some of the pilings needed to be replaced. There were holes in the floor when we moved equipment. You know, and we're trying to also, you know, freshen it up at the same time, you know, reuse some of the old wood paneling that was in there, kind of keep the feel. So
again, a pasta, linguine, things like that.
Yeah.
You could do clams, mussels?
Yes, we'll do clams. We'll do mussels. We'll,
Don't you grow
We do some clams. We grow some Manila clams, and we're going to look into growing mussels again. I've grown them in the past. I'd like to do that again. It's just a whole nother thing.
The focus of this, though, will be not the hard oyster bar.
This is definitely this is the seafood place on the water. So
permitting it, that's a whole other story. But are you doing barbecued oysters?
Yes. Oh, yeah. You are.
Is that a problem, having any permit issues with barbecue?
No. We totally remodeled the place where back in the day they used to barbecue the oysters in the back room.
Yeah.
And that hood didn't work, and so the county and we weren't going to keep it anyhow. So we've moved everything in the kitchen to one end of the restaurant. So what that's created actually is, if people remember that back room, that can be a separate room. So if you want to come in with a party of 20 or 25 and rent that back room, and maybe with the outside a party up to 50. So we're going to try to really utilize the space that way.
And so by Valentine's Day, you're hoping to be open.
Yeah.
Yeah. Is that a promise?
Is that a promise?
We'll take a break at that while John thinks about whether that's a promise or not. John Finger, co-founder of Hog Island Oyster, joined Chef John Ash and me, Steve Garner, in the KSRO kitchen. Great way to start the new year.
Join the switch to crystal clear KSRO FM, 103.5 Santa Rosa, Windsor, 94.5 Petaluma. Hear the difference.
Hi, it's Jeff Davis for Smothers European Volvo Cars and Mercedes-Benz of Santa Rosa. Needless to say, I appreciate this company of car dealers because, well, they've been a consistent sponsor of my radio show, On the Wine Road, for quite a while now. But please believe my sincerity when I say, if I had to buy a car, these two side-by-side dealerships would be on the top of my list. The people are easygoing, there's no pressure, the showrooms are modern and sleek, and it's always a pleasure to be on their lots. Between the two dealerships, Smothers European Volvo Cars and Mercedes-Benz of Santa Rosa, you have some of the finest automobiles in the world to choose from. The next time you're tooling around looking for a new vehicle, be sure to put them on your list. Smothers is a go local dealership and family owned since 1982. They're on the Corby Auto Row, SmothersEuropeanVolvoCars.com, and MBOfSantaRosa.com. Tell them I sent you and you'll get a free cup of coffee.
I don't know about you, but around this time of year, I really start worrying about my parents. I love them dearly, but it's simply become too difficult to care for them at home. I worry about them falling, eating 3 square meals a day, taking their meds, and frankly, about becoming too isolated. That's why I'm so happy that I visited Springfield Place in Petaluma. I've been to other communities and found them to be different. But at Springfield Place, I was greeted by a vibrant and caring staff that felt like family. My parents are so much happier, and they've settled in at Leisure Care. The team there and other residents treat them with dignity and respect. They still have lots of independence, but at the same time, they're very supported by the staff. I no longer worry because I know they're having 5-star fun, eating healthy, exercising, and enjoying social events like live music and dancing. Leisure Care at Springfield Place is the place to be for my parents. Go online to leisurecare.com or call 707-769-3300.
There's a better way to garden and landscape in Sonoma County, and it starts at a Better Way Produce and Nursery on Stony Point Road, just north of Todd in Santa Rosa.
Hi, Daniel R. Gibbs, botanical artist. I'm the award-winning resident licensed landscape designer and contractor. Our team has won first place 14 years in a row at the Sonoma County Fair's Hall of Flowers, and this year, our garden, Coastal Charisma, won Best of Show. I'm excited to be a part of Better Way Produce and Nursery. Our family would like to invite you to come see our old-fashioned, easy-to-shop nursery. We have great discounted landscape packages, including plants, hardscape, irrigation, design, and other outdoor needs for your garden. Don't miss our koi pond, small spaces demonstration gardens, complete with water features, and nearly 1,000 plant species.
A Better Way Produce and Nursery, 3615 Stony Point Road, just north of Todd. A Better Way Produce and Nursery, open 7 days a week, 9 to 4:30.
With Sonoma County's most accurate, most dependable forecast, here's Daniel Trucios on the KSRO Weather Watch.
Wet and windy weather for the weekend, 1 to 3 inches of rain expected today, heavy wind up to 40 mile an hour gusts, high 52, periods of showers tonight, low 41, breezy conditions for tomorrow, about an inch of rain expected, high 52, more rain coming on Monday, though lighter, high 57. Depend on weather every 30 minutes on FM News Talk 103.5 and 94.5 KSRO.
In the KSRO Tidewaters, it's Steve Garner along with Chef John Ash hosting the Good Food Hour with co-founder of Hog Island Oyster, John Finger, and the meteoric rise of Hog Island in the past 35 years since the early 1980s, opening a number of...
You know what's funny about that? It took 35 years.
Yeah.
For that. That was kind of a slow rise.
I know.
Overnight success. Yeah,
slow and steady.
And starting out in Marshall, you still have the Marshall Place. We'll talk about that. What's the best way to visit the Marshall spot? And then, of course, we have the San Francisco Place.
Ferry Building.
Of course,
that's
Ferry Mill. And we have Oxbow. Mm-hmm. And you're going to be opening another place in Marin.
Yeah, so we... Right around the same time, the guys from Tony's approached us. We had already been negotiating a lease down at Marin Country Mart, which is the old Larkspur Landing. So,
yeah. And the train's going to go there.
Yeah, so that's one of the reasons that we were really excited about doing something there. Is it's nice to be close to mass transit, and you know, I really support the idea of the train. So, and we're taking a space that most of the spaces there sort of face inward. Our space is a space that's on the outside, faces the ferry terminal itself, so you get to watch the boats come and go, and Mount Tam, so really great views, and we're going to have a full bar down at that restaurant. So
when's that anticipated?
Probably August, September.
Of this year?
Yeah.
Two restaurants opening.
Yeah, not the way we usually do it. Usually we do a few years in between, but just the way this happens. So.
It's so funny. I remember after the renovation at Ferry Plaza, I think you said something like, never again.
I know. Somebody please remind me of that before I get involved in another thing. So.
Well, that's very, very exciting. The February launch of Tony's.
Yep.
Hog Island Seafood out in Marshall, and then Country Mart later summer, early fall. And maybe there's talk of a John Ash event. Possibly.
Yes, out at, you know, one of the things we want to do at Tony's is do featured events out there. It's a great space for that kind of thing, and you know, of course, you know, one of the first ideas was we have to have John out there to do a seafood event.
And you're a good shucker still, aren't you?
Well, I'm not sure. I have to confess to this. I was a guest shucker one
yeah,
day
over at Oxbow,
over in Napa, and. I was pretty poor. Yeah. I mean, I watched these guys, you know, because when it's really busy, you're opening a lot of oysters. And I thought, oh, just don't stab yourself. Don't make a fool of
yourself. Did you wear a glove, one of those galvanized gloves?
Oh, yeah.
Good. That was smart.
Yeah, there were times we thought about the wisdom of doing the guest shucking thing, like, huh.
Liability.
Yeah.
So you're not going to be entering the shuckathlon.
No.
Right? Nothing like that.
Well, because you had, I've forgotten his name now, but he was the world champion shucker.
Well, it wasn't world champion, like, but Sean, we do a thing. We have an internal contest in the company, and then we send the top three people up to the West Coast Championship up in Shelton, Washington. That's every October, and Sean took second 1 year. A lot of people said something happened, and he really should have taken first. But and then he's been in the top five a couple times as well.
And so it's how many oysters you can open and how long?
Yeah, usually it's done two ways. So usually the way this one is done, it's 24 oysters, and you're timed. Oh. You know how fast you can open 24 oysters, and I've been a judge in a lot of competitions. Then judges go through your platter of oysters and start adding seconds on for. If you cut the belly of the oyster or there's shell chips in there, or the oyster's not in place. So it's not just how fast, but how fast and how perfect.
Well, speaking of opening oysters, what about I have heard about this for years, something called the pull tab oyster.
You
know about this?
Yeah.
So it basically, it's what it is. There's a little wire over along the adductor muscle, and you pull this little pull tab, and it automatically cuts the muscle. I heard it's caught on in places in Europe and even Japan. Is anybody doing this, or have you been approached by any company?
No, I haven't. You know, and I haven't heard it taking off in Europe, and I was in France in the fall.
I didn't
see a lot of it.
It's a great idea, though.
It's a great idea. It just seems like, boy, that's a lot of effort and work to get that little wire in there and placed properly and all that.
Okay.
So for those people who haven't been out to the farm, you know, in a while. The farm started, you actually began selling oysters a long time ago at the farm, but it was pretty funky.
Yeah. We started, you know, we have filtered seawater tanks out there. People have been out there that we can hold oysters in and make sure they're clean and ready for sale. And we did that in 88, opened the gates up, you know, had a few customers say, hey, put some picnic tables out. Mm-hmm. And the whole thing just sort of blew up from there. And so now, you know, we still have the picnic area there. And we're limited in size with our use permit with the county. We got in trouble with the county back then because we were causing traffic jams and different things and didn't have our use permit. So we went through a process and got all legalized. And we have the picnic tables, and those are reservation only. That was something we had to do by mandate of the county. So if you want to come and have a table with a barbecue and bring some of your own food and barbecue some oysters or other food, you've got to reserve ahead of time. Mm-hmm. And on the weekends, anywhere from late April through October, that's 3 or 4 months out, or you're not going to get your table. Mm. And then,
it's like trying to get it harder than the French Laundry to get a reservation.
And then a few years back, after we had gotten the picnic area legalized, we realized the picnic area really locks up our parking because people stay for a long time, and it's an enjoyable spot to sit and watch. You can watch the boats bring the oysters in, all that. We took some of the picnic tables out of rotation and don't have barbecues anymore. And now Friday through Monday, that's called the boat. It's essentially an outside oyster bar. So we shuck oysters, we barbecue oysters Friday through Monday. We do local cheese, charcuterie, usually some kind of salad or maybe some smoked fish or something like that. And that started off as no reservation, and then we had to move to reservations for that because we wound up with big long lines and stuff. So, but that's what happens Friday through Monday. So if you don't want to shuck your own, you can come Friday through Monday. Again, in the summertime, Saturday and Sunday get very, very hard. You can't just walk in. Yeah. But that's what Tony's is going to be for. Tony's is going to be the spot you can walk into. So.
And what about weekdays?
Weekdays, you can still have that old experience, especially this time of year. A lot of people don't realize in between the storms, the weather out there, because a lot of times it's not windy in the wintertime. You have these beautiful, calm days.
Most it's beautiful gorgeous. Time of year.
Yeah, yeah. So
people can go out and leisurely shuck their own oysters.
Yeah, you can shuck your own oysters.
So how would people reserve this?
Online, our website, hogonoysters.com. We have a whole reservation website there. You can also call in. Sometimes you can get on a waiting list and those kinds of things as well.
Unbelievable.
I know. Who would have thought? I know.
We'll take a break. We'll be back with John Finger from Hog Island Oyster Company right after this.
Sonoma County's local news, weather, and traffic station, FM News Talk, KSRO, 103.5, 94.5.
I'm Erin Brockovich. I've spent 27 years holding Pacific Gas and Electric accountable across this state. That's why I know you need a team that will always be on your side. After the 2017 wildfires, law firms flooded your communities looking to make a quick buck. But our team is different. We are committed to this fight because holding PG&E accountable and giving you the representation you deserve is the right thing to do. We're here to work with all of our clients to build their cases and make sure they're made whole for what they lost in these devastating fires. We're here for you, and we always will be. Learn more at pgelawsuit.com or call us today, 707-237-2445.
You can meet the team, hear testimonials, and have many of your questions answered on the website, pgelawsuit.com, or call 707-237-2445. Noreen Evans of Watts Guerra LLP is the attorney responsible for the content of this advertisement.
For almost 50 years, United Way of the Wine Country has been dedicated to improving lives locally. They're deeply committed to achieving lasting solutions for the entire community in the areas of education, financial stability, and health. Through programs such as Schools of Hope, School Readiness Backpacks, Summer Reading Packs, and Little Free Libraries, and Earn It, Keep It, Save It, United Way is creating opportunities for a better life for all. We all win when a child succeeds in school, when all families and individuals are financially stable, and when people are healthy. It takes everyone in the community working together and living united to create a brighter future. To find out how you can give, advocate, or volunteer with the United Way of the Wine Country, go online to unitedwaywinecountry.org or call United Way at 707-528-4485. That's 707-528-4485.
Paradise Pet Resorts welcomes your furry family members to go to paradise for the day. Try doggy daycare. It helps your dog socialize, learn dog etiquette, and get exercise. There's all-day supervised pup play, indoor and outdoor yards, and webcams so you can check on them from anywhere. Nobody loves your pets like you do, but nobody cares for your pets like they do at Paradise Pet Resorts.
It's paradise. Paradise Pet Resorts.
Sarcoma. Odds are you've never heard that word before. For the 40 people diagnosed with sarcoma every day, it is a life-changing word, because sarcoma is cancer. Through awareness, advocacy, and research, the Sarcoma Foundation of America is bringing hope to the families whose lives have been turned upside down by a cancer they had never heard of until diagnosis. Please join us in the fight to find the cure for sarcoma. For more information on the work of the Sarcoma Foundation of America, go to curesarcoma.com.
KSRO, AM, FM, and online. Depend on it.
Chef John Ash joining John Finger from Hog Island Oyster. I'm Steve Gardner. And the last few minutes of the show, we want to talk about oysters and the environment and the sustainability.
Yeah, we were talking off the air about both oysters' contribution to the improvement of the environment, but also the bigger issue of, because we hear so much about it today, about how the seas are in trouble and what can we all do. And I know that's been a big charge of Hog Island right from the very beginning, is to act in a sustainable and ethical way.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's like I said earlier, it's one of the things that really attracted me to this business, that it really, you know, you're growing food in a way that you have to really pay attention to the environment, because we're not feeding and fertilizing and doing all those kinds of things. So it teaches you to pay attention to the bay itself and what's happening and making sure that that bay is going to stay healthy. So, you know, in a lot of places, you know, especially on the East Coast now, they're actually trying to encourage more oyster farming and more oyster seeding because they realize that there aren't enough filter feeders in the bay. You know, filter feeders sort of help a bay stay in balance. They filter out a lot of particulate matter, you know, particularly a lot of algae. So if you have a really nutrient-rich bay, which a lot of our coastal estuaries are because there's lots of us who live around and there's nutrients running into the bay, you get lots of algae blooms. And if you don't get that filtered, then the sunlight can't penetrate and get the seagrasses and all those things growing, which are important, nursery grounds and all that. So, you know, oysters have been termed a cornerstone or keystone species in estuaries. So there's that whole side. And on the other side, it's that they really truly are canaries in the coal mine, first and foremost from the human health part. I mean, you can't – the fact that you have bays in this country that are clean enough that you can eat oysters directly out of says something because we've lost a lot of those areas in this country because of pollution. But on a more global scale, what we're now a little bit more concerned with, again, it's a canary in a coal mine story, is changing ocean conditions. So, you know, there's – I don't know if there's still any debate at all about climate change and the fact that humans are part of the issue. But what we see, and we don't use the term climate change, but we talk about changing ocean conditions. So we are seeing indications already ahead of models that we are changing ocean chemistry because of the amount of carbon dioxide we're putting into the atmosphere. When you change ocean chemistry, you change a lot of creatures who are not just oysters, but any creature that has to form shells has to struggle a little bit harder to form shells. And if it has to struggle harder, it becomes more susceptible to disease and all those kinds of things. We're already seeing that in the Pacific Northwest. So, you know, part of our job is to try to educate people about that, that we do need to be responsible about the use of fossil fuels and try to come up with alternatives because we're already making differences and not good differences. And I use the terminology with people. It's like, look, even if we don't know exactly how this is all going to pan out, and some people say, well, maybe it's being overwrought and this and that, you have to at least admit we're embarking on a huge chemistry experiment, and that's probably not a good idea. And the thing for us, you know, both, you know, we come from a science background, and as a scientist, what you get worried about is not just change, but rate of change, because that's when animals have a hard time adapting. One of the reasons we started our own hatchery is so we can start breeding animals that hopefully can stay ahead of what we see as changing ocean conditions. So,
you're located in a breathtakingly beautiful part of the world.
Yeah.
You need to remember that. And there is a hog island, isn't there?
There is.
An actual island?
There is. There is a small island up near the mouth of the bay, near where we first started, called Hog Island. And the story was some pigs got weak for a week, loose on the island for a week or a day or a year, depending. And then so they called it Hog Island. But we've since found out there actually are hog islands in many bays, especially on the East Coast.
Know this.
And a lot of times these settlers used islands sort of as a corral for pigs. So we've actually had to be very diligent because we have the trademark on Hog Island for shellfish and for restaurants.
But can you paddle over to Hog Island?
You can paddle over to Hog Island. They don't want you on it. The National Park Service owns it now, and it's a very primary seal haul out site. So, you know, they don't want you disturbing the seals, but it's there and you can see it.
And so you have a lease on this property, and that's is that issued by the Federal Bureau
by Fish and Wildlife?
Fish and Wildlife.
Which is California Fish and Wildlife. So in California, almost everything below the high tide mark is what's called public trust land. So you're leasing from some agency, usually state in this case. In some places up in Humboldt Bay, you're leasing from the Harbor District.
Oh.
There are some privately owned tide lands in the state. In Washington State, there's a lot of privately owned tide land. And there's actually either that runs from a house down onto the shore, or there's actually land there that's between the high tide mark and low tide mark specifically for growing shellfish that you can buy. So it's different state by state. But in a lot of states, it's a lease from some government entity.
This is like a 99-year lease?
No, I wish. The original ones were 25-year leases. Oh. And now they're all 15-year with 10-year renewals. And you do need a good long-term because it's a hard business to make money in, you know, just farming oysters. So you want to have a good long-term. So
Well, I don't know if you are. I'm hungry for oysters. I'm just dying for an oyster. Yeah. And we thought we would help our listeners think about a few things that they could do with Hog Island oysters.
Oh, yeah.
So why don't we post your very, very well-respected Hangtown Fry recipe, but we're not going to make it. You're going to simplify
it. I'm going to simplify it. Yeah. Well, this was originally done back when we were all, chefs were trying to show off and... But the original idea was eggs, bacon, and oysters, just cooked together. So it was kind of an oyster omelet.
But you had crepes that accompanied the
original. Well, instead of doing just scrambled eggs, I did egg crepes and then slice them and blah, blah,
fancy
blah, blah.
Pants.
But nobody's going to do that.
Okay, so what we'll do, we'll post that recipe in the next day.
Yeah,
so, and what about from Hog Island? What should we post?
Well, I think, two of them might be fun. One is we have a great clam chowder recipe that we're really well known for, so...
Is that an original Hog Island?
Yeah,
recipe?
So we because we grow Manila clams, and when we opened a restaurant in San Francisco, we didn't want to just buy chopped frozen clams somewhere and make a clam chowder. And also, where I grew up, we made clam chowder. And in college, I made clam chowder with friends, and we never put flour in it. And
what?
So,
you mean the spoon doesn't stand
straight up? No, so some people are taken aback by it, but we told our chef two things in the beginning. Like, look, it's a New England clam chowder. No flour, and we're using our clams and the shell in it. So it's sort of a rustic clam chowder.
Fantastic.
That's become, we sell, I don't know how many, thousands and thousands.
So don't you think this is something that you could sell to the market in general?
Yeah.
Just the clam chowder?
Yeah. it's interesting. And we're in Country Mart, we're thinking about doing that where we could actually have some frozen chowder base, and you buy a pound of clams, and here's the recipe, and go home with a little milk or cream, and bang, and you have your clam chowder.
And it does contain bacon?
Yeah, oh, absolutely, of course.
Thank you.
Yeah.
So, of course.
Yeah.
So we'll post that.
Yeah.
And we also should mention the hogwash.
Hogwash.
Yeah.
Which you're famous for.
Yes. So we came up with Mike Watchhorn, who was my original partner when I started the business, but came up with this recipe. Kind of a riff, actually, on a...
Mignonette.
Yeah. But from blanking out of space, Coyote Cafe.
Oh, yeah.
Mark.
Why am I spacing out of Mark's last name?
That's all right. It'll come.
Yeah. Anyhow, so
how could you forget him?
I know. Mark Miller.
Mark
Miller. It was a riff on one of his recipes to come up with a mignonette that's based on rice vinegar. And just really simple, some lime juice, rice vinegar, serrano peppers, shallots, cilantro.
Perfect.
Really,
so we'll post that one, too. So suggested reading. If you're looking for more information about oysters, Heaven on the Half Shell, the story of the Northwest love affair with the oyster, David Gordon, who's visited us in the studio a couple of times, dynamite book. Rowan Jacobson, who's been with us a couple of times in the studio, has written The Essential Oysters, The Oyster's Guide, remarkable resource.
Yeah.
And you want to go to his website. It's called Oyster Eater. It is the best website on oysters,
absolutely,
I think, on the internet for information. So that's Rowan Jacobson. Also, Mark Kurlansky,
who's
been with us many, many times, wrote The History on the Half Shell. And he is a trip. The whole history of the Eastern Seaboard.
Well,
Mark Kurlansky.
The big oyster.
And the big oyster.
Yeah.
He's hysterical. And, of course, MFK Fisher wrote quite a lot about oysters, didn't she? Consider the oyster?
Yes. Yeah.
And so pick up her writings. And I think the best quote I could find, and I still think this is my favorite one, was the one by Tom Robbins that wrote, "Eating a raw oyster is like French kissing a mermaid."
Yeah,
would you
that's
say
great, yes.
That's the definitive one?
Yeah.
With that, we want to say thank you, John Finger, for joining us.
Well, thanks for having me.
And we're holding you to that February opening.
Oh, boy. All right.
We can. And we'll when we know for sure the day, we'll let everybody know.
Great. All right.
Great seeing you today.
All right. Thanks.
John Ash, we'll see you next Saturday.
Yeah. Yep.
Thanks, everybody, for listening. Steve Garner, thank you and inviting you to join us next Saturday. Clark Wolf at the table following the news. High noon at KSRO Santa Rosa.